for people that are like, well, I need to eat that first meal of the day, we're going to answer that question. For those that are like, I don't need to eat until later, we're going to answer that question. Let's go.
The most energetic, fit, and stress-resilient people on the planet practice daily habits to keep their hormones balanced, their gut healthy, and their muscles and mind strong. Welcome to That Fitness Couple. We're Mike and Corey Beth Lepowski, founders of Pure Physique.
This podcast is designed to provide you with everything we've discovered and continue to discover about nutrition, training, and lifestyle. Today, we all live hectic lives.
So we've made it our mission to make your fitness time efficient and to build you up. Hope you share and enjoy. Let's dive into today's episode. Let's go.
Do you fast? The answer is yes, you do. Even if you're coming on here and listening to this because you wanted to learn about intermittent fasting or you are considering intermittent fasting, the fact of the matter is we all fast. That time from which you have your last calories of the day until the time you wake up in the morning and have your first bite of food or your first drink, you are fasting. But today we are going to talk specifically about how to fast. We're going to talk about why to fast, and we're going to talk about who should and who should not fast. So we're actually going to run this thing backwards from the way we normally would. We'd probably spend a lot of time going into the whys of intermittent fasting. But the first thing that we want to do is define this, because as you know, Corey Beth, there are a lot of methods of fasting, are there not?
There are quite a few.
And, you know, amongst those, you have OMAD, which a lot of people will refer to as one meal a day or 24-hour fast. Then you have those who will do alternate day fasting. Then you have extended fasts, which extended fasts typically will go anywhere from 2 days to upwards of 10 days. And just a little fun fact, the longest recorded fast in history was 396 days. Wow. I mean, that's incredible. And the gentleman that did it, he was a Scotsman. His name was Angus Barbary, and he actually lost 276 pounds over the course of that 392 days. And during that time, though, he did go to a hospital, got regular work done. They made sure that he was still getting certain nutrients and vitamins that his body needed. So we're not suggesting anybody do that. But the reason why I'm bringing this up before we get into a deeper discussion around the how is simply because when people hear about fasting, and whether they're hearing about the benefits of fasting or they're hearing about the nightmares of fasting and why you shouldn't or why it's dangerous, oftentimes it's based on these studies or research that's been done on some of these more extreme versions of fasting. So for our purposes today, we're going to talk more about intermittent fasting, and more specifically, the way we prefer to view it is as time-restricted eating. So do you just want to give everybody a quick rundown of what time-restricted eating looks like?
Yeah, a time-restricted eating is just basically a window in which you decide that you are not going to eat, and then there's a window in which you're going to feast. It's not deprivation. It's not starvation, you know, and maybe for people that are consuming a lot of carbohydrates, you're like, oh my gosh, I can't even wait for my next meal. Mike is going to get into some of the reasons that we start to fast because we're so dependent on that glucose or that next meal. For us personally, I would say for about a period of 5, 6, maybe even close to 7 years, we did a 16-8 fast, which meant that for 16 hours, we were fasting. A lot of that was during when we were sleeping. And then for 8 hours is when we basically had the window of our food. And I know you're going to get into this too, but for people that are like, well, I need to eat that first meal of the day, we're going to answer that question. For those that are like, I don't need to eat until later, we're going to answer that question, because fasting is this really cool, flexible window that can move throughout the course of the day with you. And then, of course, if you wake up in the morning and you're like, I am starving, I need to eat, or you're a woman going through your monthly menstrual cycle, you're like, I need food, you can eat. So let's dive on in.
So as Corey Beth said, we're going to be talking specifically about the 16-8 method, which is probably the most popular. And the reason why we bring this up is because of all the different methods of fasting, this has probably been the one shown to not be detrimental to anybody's health, because we're so close to doing this anyway. We're fasting for maybe 7 or 8 hours a night, and then we wake up and maybe we're not eating right away. We're just having our cup of coffee, and maybe that has a few calories in it. But for the most part, you know, we're mostly fasting at least 8, And for some people, just naturally 10 hours, you know, between the time that you don't eat before bedtime and then maybe that little bit of gap after you've gotten up. So that said, we're not really that far off when we follow this 16-8 method. And others will talk about doing 18-6, but we're very specific about keeping it to 16-8 or having it be 14-10 so that, as we've talked about at length, we can get enough food and specifically enough protein throughout the day. So with the 16-8 method, you know, it's really simple to do. I mean, it is just basically determining that, hey, this is the 8-hour window that I'm going to try my best to stick to each and every day. And for some people, that means they're waking up, they're skipping breakfast, they're just having some calories, maybe from their coffee that they're having or their tea in the morning. But other than that, they're not eating any solid food till lunchtime. And if that lunchtime began at noon, that means you're cutting it off by 8 p.m. But we don't have to stick to that specific schedule. The reason why I like talking about intermittent fasting or time-restricted eating being a sliding scale is that we can make the adjustments that we need to make from day to day. So if your schedule doesn't allow you on some days to eat until way later and you're like, that's not going to work for me, then you might be the person who fares better getting up in the morning, maybe after your first hour, actually having your first meal then, and now your 8-hour window begins. Maybe if most days you eat at noon, but you're feeling a little hungry and you want to start at 10, go ahead and do that. But just know that you're going to probably end 2 hours earlier than normal. So really, the how is not that difficult. It is just literally setting your schedule and then giving yourself the flexibility to say, hey, some days, maybe I am going to push it a little bit later because it's more convenient. And other days saying, maybe I'm going to start a little bit sooner.
Yeah, I know. I love that. I think that that's so important. I think that we can get so dogmatic about fasting as we can with anything. Oftentimes, you know, clients or friends will be like, you know, I was so hungry at 11, but you know, my hour of like feeding didn't start until noon. I'm like, why didn't you just eat at 11? You know, if your body is telling you it's hungry, we have a responsibility to listen to our body. And so I love how you paint this for people.
Well, and then the other question that typically comes up is, you know, how often should I eat now that I'm going to have this reduced window? And, you know, this also can be a very nuanced answer depending upon who you are, what your schedule is, and what your preferences are. Many people who do intermittent fasting will decide 2 meals a day is ideal. So maybe they're eating a really large lunch, and that just allows them to go right through until dinner time. And then they're sitting down and having a big dinner. And now you're full from both of those meals that there is no desire to eat afterwards, which I think is a big advantage. And one of the reasons why I myself personally tend to fall into that category. But then there's those who don't want to eat a very large lunch. Maybe it's a modest size lunch. And then they're having a snack somewhere in between then and dinner, and then the larger dinner.
That's mine. And I like that. You know, I don't like to sit down and consume like 40 to 60 grams of protein first thing in the morning. It feels for me like too much. I mean, my stomach is probably a little bit smaller than yours. I'll have 2.5 meals, you know, but that's the beauty of it. It's a window. And so you can just eat within the window when works for you. I like having, you know, a moderate size lunch. I'll have a snack somewhere during the day, whether it's a protein shake, beef broth, beef sticks. You know, we talked about that actually in our last episode, right? About protein, making sure. And then I'll have, you know, a nice hearty dinner with tons of protein.
Yeah. And you know, what's great is that you don't have to do it the same way every single day. You know, the beauty of this is just simply saying this: within that window that is my feeding window, I am going to consume all the food that I'm supposed to have within that window. And if that means one day you are snacking throughout that 8-hour window, so to speak, you can do that. If the next day you decide that it's going to be one big meal and a snack, you can do that.
We're handing you a fasting card today and it's got tons of flexibility in it.
I mean, that's the beautiful
part.
It's
like a flex pass.
Yeah, absolutely. No blackout dates. The big question, and again, I've talked about it a little bit already, is always, but what about my coffee? You know, what does that mean for what I'm doing in the morning? Or if it's you, you don't drink coffee, you drink tea.
I want to jump through the camera and microphone right now and be like, no coffee, mate. Like, just please.
Yeah.
No coffee, mate. No international delight. There is nothing that is redeeming in those ingredients. It's literally not even something you should put in your body. So can we just start with that?
Yes. I mean, yes. Where I really want to go with this, And the question, the reason why it gets brought up, and I think it's a good question to ask, people are concerned that I'm consuming calories with my coffee in the form of my cream, my milk, my sugar.
Or just the coffee itself.
Coffee Mate.
It's 15 calories, right, to have coffee.
Not even that much, usually.
That's what my fitness pal says.
Well, I don't trust my fitness pal, number one. We could do a whole other episode
on that.
But the point being is that you're correct. If you're already concerned that, wait, I'm drinking my coffee and it has this stuff in it, does this break my fast? And the answer is both yes and no. This is one of those nuanced answers. And the reason does go a little bit more into the why. But let me start with this. From a purist's perspective, you would be drinking just black coffee and not consuming any calories whatsoever. From our perspective, which is less purist, we're looking at what is the main advantage we get from intermittent fasting, and can we still consume some calories and maintain that advantage? And the answer to that question would be, yes, you can. Now, this does dip into the why, so let me just throw one of the whys out there. And this has everything to do with insulin management. So we're all aware of the hormone insulin, and most of us are aware that if our insulin is constantly elevated, well, that eventually makes us insulin resistant. And as a result of that, we tend to store more fat. One of the main advantages of fasting or time-restricted eating is that it gets our insulin levels lower. And now, if we're consuming something first thing in the morning that's going to raise that insulin very high, well, we've broken our fast and we've lost the advantage of any time-restricted eating that we're doing. However, if what we consume does not cause a rise in insulin, then we're still safe. If we're not over-consuming calories, we're still safe.
So no Coffee Mate.
So definitely no Coffee Mate. Cori Beth is going to drive this one home.
Here's why. I drank light and sweet coffee, like from when I started drinking coffee all the way through and after college. And, you know, that to me was like so good and so delicious. I would put, literally like two parts Coffee Mate to one part coffee. And that's what I would drink. And, you know, it's, you don't know what you don't know. And the thing that's crazy is we definitely underestimate how much cream or creamer we're putting in our coffee. And then we wildly underestimate the impact that has on our blood sugar, our insulin, all of those processes that are so important in our body. I mean, I didn't even know that that's what was going on or why I crashed after I had coffee. I'm like, coffee makes me sleepy. It wasn't the coffee. It was the Coffee Mate, you know? So we went through a period probably for several years where we just drank black coffee. And that's totally cool with intermittent fasting. We're now at a place where cream, just straight half and half or heavy whipping cream is what we'll add. And that's not going to have a significant blood sugar spike on anybody.
It's going to have virtually zero impact.
Yes.
But what else does a person add on top of that that becomes problematic? And that is where the sugar comes into play. And I know we're also going to get the question, well, what about sweeteners? And, you know, it's a very, again, nuanced and interesting answer to this because there's not a lot of research that shows that the sweetener is going to have a negative impact on your blood glucose or your insulin. Yet at the same time, anecdotally, we know that people have that sweetener and it's triggering those dopamine centers in your brain that tend to result in us feeling hungry maybe about an hour later or so. So we think it's more advantageous to steer clear of that altogether. You know, in the big scheme of things, is it going to destroy your fasting efforts and your insulin lowering efforts? Probably not, but it's better to steer away from that. And that goes into, again, a whole other conversation.
No, I think that's enough for people though to take home. Like if you like coffee, you can have it. Just be very aware of what you're putting in it. And if you're a person that likes it not black, just go for half and half and you're all set. Hey, we hope you're enjoying our show and finding it valuable. If you could do us a quick favor, it would mean the world to us. Please take a moment to rate and review our podcast on your favorite platform. Your reviews help us reach more people and share our message. Plus, we'd love to hear your feedback. Thanks for being awesome and supporting us. Now, back to the show.
All right, so let's get next into the who. So we're still going to leave the why for the back end. I think, you know, I want those people who are showing up who are basically like, I already know I want to do this. Just tell me how to do it. Okay, great. Then there's those people who are like, I think I want to do this, but I'm not sure if it's for me. We're going to address you now. And then I'm going to leave all my nerd stuff for those people who are like, I'm going to follow this through all the way to the end because I need to know every single detail.
I love it.
Anyway, the who. This is often great for people who are seeking fat loss. It's for those people who are looking for a simple way to manage their weight. And it's also for those who are looking to lower their insulin and their blood glucose. And we say this because, well, the majority of studies that have been done, and if you go to PubMed right now and type in intermittent fasting, time-restricted eating, and you search for the studies, the research articles on it, you will find over 125,000 studies on fasting.
They're going to say 125.
No. And the larger majority of them have been done on people who are diabetics and pre-diabetics and or obese. Now, that said, there has been plenty of studies also done on healthier populations, those who are just looking to lose a little bit of weight, as well as athletes, as well as bodybuilders. So there is like a large amount of research around time-restricted eating, around intermittent fasting, which is great because we know that it is an effective tool for many people. Now, we're not going to sit here and say that it is the magic bullet. It is the end-all be-all or the be-all end-all, whichever comes first. I'm always confused about that. But the point being that it is a very effective tool.
Well, and when we talk about diabetes and pre-diabetes, it's type 2. You should know that if that's something that your doctor has shared with you. You know, type 1 diabetes is genetic and something that your food choices don't have an impact on reversing, whereas type 2 diabetes is, it's completely food dependent. And so when people come and they'll share things like, you know, well, I'm pre-diabetic, like, so that's it. I'm like, you can literally change that with your nutrition. You know, or like, oh, I have type 2 diabetes and my mom had it, my grandma had it. And like, that's all based on what you guys are eating. So just out of a place of like realistic logic as well as love, if it's type 2, this episode's for you.
Yes, it is totally behavioral. Before we get even more specific though about who should and who shouldn't, I think this is where we do need to dip into the why just a little bit more. So we already made mention of insulin management. And, you know, the reason why fasting works well in terms of helping people to get better control over their blood glucose and their insulin is because our bodies are always trying to determine whether we're in a fed state or if we're in a fasted state. And when we're in that fed state, especially if we're consuming a larger amount of carbohydrates as part of our nutrition, then our insulin level is going to be elevated almost constantly. And that's because of the way that we eat today. Like we are constantly having food available to us so that the moment the desire strikes us to put something in our mouth, it's there, it's accessible.
Uber Eats it right to your door.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's almost too convenient for many of us. And, you know, we were never meant to walk around with chronically elevated insulin levels, just like we were never meant to walk around with chronically elevated cortisol levels. And interestingly enough, I mean, those two actually tend to go hand in hand. If you have constantly elevated cortisol, you tend to also have elevated insulin and vice versa.
And you're chronically probably inflamed.
Absolutely. But the beauty of fasting is that during that time in which you're not eating, it's giving your body a chance to allow those insulin levels to come down. And as those insulin levels come down, well, the rise of other hormones such as glucagon go up. And if we look at it from a very simplistic point of view, insulin is oftentimes referred to as the fat storage hormone, while glucagon, its twin, is often referred to as the fat burning hormone. That is, again, a very, very simplistic way of looking at this. But the beauty is that when we think about it in that simplistic way, well, if I could keep my insulin levels lower, that means my glucagon levels would be higher. And so that is ultimately what it does. Now, the problem is that many people, because of how we've been eating for most of our lives, we never give ourselves enough time for those glucagon levels to stay elevated long enough. And so time-restricted eating is a way to just simply help that process along.
It's like a reset. And I will say for people that are struggling with sugar cravings, you know, it's we're glucose dependent, really. You know, I think it's such an amazing way to, again, from a non-scientific way, just get in tune with your body and start to be like, wait, I'm actually not hungry and I would have been eating now. Wait, oh my gosh, that's what hunger feels like. I think because of the environment and society that we live in, we forget what it actually feels like to feel hungry as I'm sitting here listening to your grumbling stomach.
Well, Thank you. I mean, that's because I'm actually coming up on the time where I should be eating. In fact, I probably should have had some of my protein snacks before sitting down here. But the one thing is that I love the clarity I have.
Me too.
When I'm in a fasted state. So sometimes I'm okay with ignoring the hunger and working through it.
Yes.
Because I know that the moment I put food in my stomach, and it's going to be a lot of food, that a lot of that mental clarity just starts to dissipate. So,
well, and I think just from an energetic standpoint, you know, your body has so much energy that it can expend. And it's like right now for both of us, neither of us have had anything to eat except for you coffee, me tea. And to get to this point, yeah, my mental clarity is off the charts. There's no brain fog, and it's almost like addictive to get to this point each day. So we'll schedule harder tasks in our day at this point because it's just easier to do them because you feel really super clear. Once we eat, our body has to start up our whole digestive process. All of the blood has to go. That's maybe like in our brain right now, down to our stomach to start to digest that food and pull nutrients, extract them from it. And so it makes a lot of sense why people feel so good with mental state when they use intermittent fasting.
Absolutely. All right. So we're going to move on to the next point, which is calorie management. And it is an undeniable fact that we must be in a caloric deficit if we are to burn body fat. And there are people on the fasting side or the very hormonal side of fat loss who say, oh, you know, the issue is not a calorie issue. It's totally a hormonal issue, specifically insulin. And I think it's a both issue.
I agree.
That's my personal feeling is that both influence each other. If we're eating an overabundance of calories, it's going to negatively affect our hormones. If our hormones aren't in balance, then our body's ability to use up those calories that we're consuming is not as good. So it's definitely a both issue.
What I will say too is for people that are eating a quote unquote perfect nutritional plan, but they're chronically stressed and they're not sleeping, your hormones are whacked out and your diet is not going to help you.
Absolutely. Well, that said, you know, a few questions that I would like to pose to those out there who are wondering, you know, should I be doing this? Is this the right thing for me? Is let's talk about some of your preferences. Would you prefer to eat a meal and feel hungry an hour and a half or 3 hours later because that meal was so small? Or would you prefer to eat a big meal and not feel hungry for the next 5 to 6 hours?
I would take option B.
Okay. So then that said, you know, would you prefer to meticulously track your calories?
Already no.
Because you have to spread them throughout the day.
Hard no.
Okay. Or eat larger meals where you're not really as concerned about managing your calories because they're just going to be all packed into those two meals.
That's a B for me.
Okay. I mean, me too. And I think what's interesting is, again, where we came from. We came from that, hey, let's meticulously track our calories, make sure that it's adding up to the right amount each day by the end of the day. And then we made that switch, which for all intents and purposes was a very difficult and mind-blowing shift to saying we're not going to track anything, but just eat until we feel full, do that twice a day. And interestingly enough, the fat loss is exactly the same.
Well, and eat until we feel full using very specific foods to do that. We were not going and finding Pop-Tarts and eating until
Correct.
We felt full. We were prioritizing protein, which again, if you listen to any other episode here, that's really important.
Well, I think that, you know, you're bringing up a really important point for people because they think that intermittent fasting means I could still eat anything I want and it doesn't matter. And that's not true. But I think the advantages that we've found with implementing it ourselves is that you can have that calorie restriction without restriction, meaning you don't have to restrict yourself at every single meal and be concerned with how much you're having. It just tends to work itself out when you eat to feel full with healthy foods.
It is kind of crazy. I mean, to sit down and just have ground beef and to literally eat until you cannot eat anymore, but you still don't feel like engorged. You don't feel so full that like it hurts.
Yeah, I mean, and I find it interesting too that there's this feeling of contentment that comes with eating a meal and just knowing that you could walk away and you're not looking for a snack yeah. right after it, you know, or again, an hour or 2 hours later. And that's when I know that my previous meal was not large enough is if just shortly after I am already looking for something else, I know that I underdid it at lunch yeah. and or dinner. So for that reason, you know, if you're doing time-restricted eating properly and you're eating the proper load of food, then you shouldn't have these feelings of nagging hunger or not feeling content after you've finished eating.
You need a snack.
Yes.
No snacks.
And then, as we mentioned too, again, just feeling fuller longer. That to me is everything. All right. Well, that said, the other component here is diet psychology. And we've kind of touched on this a little bit already, but listen, anybody who has dieted has probably struggled more with the psychological aspects of dieting versus the diet themselves. And to clarify, what I mean is many people don't actually mind eating healthy foods. And a lot of people don't mind eliminating the junk because once it's out, once they've experienced just even 3 or 4 days in a row of not having sugar, all of a sudden they lose those cravings. So I don't think that people actually mind making some of those changes. It's psychologically what happens during that period of time. And this is where we hear, when people talk about dieting, you hear words like frustrated, boring, deprived,
bland,
hard. And those things are true. Like, dieting can often be all of those things. But what if we could diet in a way that doesn't feel like dieting? What if it's just the way that we eat? What if it's just the way that we carry out our day in terms of when and how we eat? I'll just come from that bodybuilding perspective again. That is probably the most psychologically demanding thing you can do from a diet perspective.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, there's so much we could do, and I know we want to keep this about intermittent fasting, but what I will say is I've never seen people change their bodies so drastically from being so tight, so thin, so, I mean, toned, ripped, muscular, to like blowing up like a tick in 3 months. I mean, it's crazy. And then the way that they talk, and then they think that the only way to get back to that really amazing competition ready, stage ready shape is this crazy restrictive diet of like green beans, ketchup, and boiled chicken. And I will say that putting intermittent fasting into play for us, first of all, we never really felt that way. I mean, we would gorge a little bit after, right? But I think I'll give total credit to Mike for helping walk me through that. This has been such a beautiful way to come out of that really intense mind psychology that I don't view food like that at all, nor have I for the last 10 years post-bodybuilding.
Well, and what I'll, you know, present to everybody is this. What we're talking about in terms of what we've experienced with bodybuilding is only a little bit more of an extreme and pronounced experience that everybody has when it comes to dieting. I mean, the only difference is that with bodybuilding, you're pushing it so far because there is this goal at the end that you know you have to reach. Otherwise, you're going to be really embarrassed, number one. But when it comes to dieting in general for general population, we know we can stop at any time. And that's what most people do, which is why they just go back and forth between dieting and not dieting. And, you know, what also happens when we do that? We have some success, we lose some body fat, but then we put it back on. You said bodybuilders, fitness competitors will blow up like a tick and actually look unrecognizable to who they were just months earlier. Whereas for the general population, it's maybe losing the 10, the 15 pounds and you put it back on. So it's not, you know,
it's yo-yo diet.
Psychologically, it's the same though. Yeah. It's just the same, it's just to a different degree.
It's more extreme.
It is more extreme. But what intermittent fasting or time-restricted eating offers us is this way of not having to watch the clock, not having to worry about when the next meal is coming.
Not having to keep a food scale in your house.
Oh, you know, I mean, that, or, you know, being glucose dependent.
Yeah.
We started early on by saying that there is this insulin and this blood glucose management advantage to intermittent fasting.
It's real.
And it's very real. And what happens is when we're in that diet mindset of eating those smaller meals spread throughout the day, I mean, we're so dependent upon carbohydrates for energy, we constantly have those fluctuations. And I'm going to say this, for the person who is in that place, who's thinking about making this transition, I'm not going to promise that the transition is going to be easy.
Right.
It never is, because those things don't go away overnight. But one of the beauties of taking this approach is that it really does make becoming fat adapted much easier. And when our bodies are fat adapted, that means we're not glucose dependent, right? So if you're that person who's really struggling with controlling your hunger or controlling your blood sugar, this really has been researched as being a very effective method of doing so.
Can I just paint a picture of that? Because maybe people don't understand, or they're like, wait, is that me? I'm not sure. The difference is me looking back at me like 15 years ago, where I would leave my teaching job for a 25-minute drive home. And as I'm driving down the highway, once I forgot my lunch. And so I did a whole day of teaching. I didn't have lunch. And as I'm driving home, I'm like, oh my God, I got to eat. Like, I got to eat, you know? And so there's this big gas station I stopped at. And it was like, I grabbed like 2 protein bars, a cup of coffee, like all this ridiculous stuff. I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to put something in me. Like, I'm going to pass out. To now, that's literally not a big deal.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like that at all. So for people that like get dizzy, your blood sugar drops, all that, you're glucose dependent likely.
Yeah. And, you know, there's that obsessiveness around your diet. Even if you're not on a diet, there's an obsessiveness around it.
That I have to put food in
me. I have to have something right now. And I think it's summed up. The advantage of doing this is summed up by a story of one of our clients who, after she overcame her glucose dependence and after she got some weeks under her belt of doing some fasting, she went on a trip. And she gets on the plane and they're getting ready to take off. And suddenly they had to shut the plane down and they sat on the tarmac for 3 hours.
I hope you get a refund.
That is horrible in and of itself. But when you think about how people started responding to that, she said, everybody around me started freaking out. And what were they freaking out about? Food. They were worried about not getting to the destination, which was only going to be about 2.5 hours away, but not getting there in time and being able to eat, or getting served on the plane and having enough food, right? All of those things became a real concern. And she's literally listening to people freaking out around her. And in her own skin, she had this level of comfort and peace that, oh, well, I fast every day. So this is not a big deal. So what? I'm going to go a few more hours without eating. And eventually when the stewardesses did come around and offered people snacks as they're sitting there on the tarmac, snacks, which
pretzels.
What are those going to do? Those are going to raise your blood glucose and your insulin and cause you to feel hungrier shortly after. Mm-hmm. She was like, I don't need that. I'm good. I will just wait until I get there. And that to me has been personally one of the greatest advantages, is not having to worry about when the next meal is coming. And although I have more recently opened up my feeding window, and I did an episode, you know, not that long back talking about how I've stopped fasting, you know, it's more that I haven't stopped, but I've become more relaxed with it at this point. My bigger concern is making sure I get enough protein in, but which I guess will just lead us right into the next and last part of this, which is who should and who shouldn't be doing time-restricted eating. I think the shoulds, as we've kind of laid out already, it's those who still feel like they need a little bit more help or a better method to help them lose body fat. That would be one. Something that's easier to follow that doesn't take as much management. The next person would be that person who is glucose dependent, who really feels like, I really have no control.
Well, I am the person on the plane.
Yeah, I'm the person on the plane freaking out.
Maybe you want to give this a shot.
This might be a good way to do it. And I'm going to just say that in terms of the how, it doesn't mean that you have to rush into it and do this every single day. You know, there is something to be said for starting slowly. Maybe it's one or 2 days. Well, we could go about it 2 different ways. Yeah. You can just say, hey, typically my feeding window is currently 16 hours. And I literally eat over the course of 16 hours. And the only 8 that I'm not eating is when I'm pretty much sleeping. So for you, it would be just changing it and trying to move to maybe 12-12.
I think that's the easiest way for people, to be honest. Like anyone that's asked for our guidance or help in doing this, it's a 12-12 window. And it's you're eating from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And then you go to bed. And you're not getting up in the middle of the night eating. And then you wake up in the morning, you eat from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. or 7 to 7. I think that's very, very bite-sized for people brand new to this concept.
And then in the following week, you can start seeing if you can shrink it a little bit more. So maybe you're only shrinking it by an hour that week. And maybe, again, to your point, you're not eating until 9 or you're cutting it off by 7. And you can just keep doing that until you work your way to that 16-8. Though we've had people who have never been able to reach the 16-8, but they settled on like 15-9. right? And
awesome.
That works well. Or 14-10 still works well. I would consider myself at that 14-10 these days. And so I think that if you're the person who has difficulty trying to manage your calories for fat loss, this is an advantage. And for those glucose-dependent reasons, definitely an advantage and worth trying.
Pre-diabetes diagnosis, we're not giving medical advice, but hey, that may be an awesome time to try this.
Well, the research is very clear that people who are pre-diabetic can completely go into remission with utilizing fasting.
Not so. Medical advice. Go read the research.
Who shouldn't be doing this? I think this is an interesting one, and we've brought it up here before in our discussions around carnivore. You know, the more that you are at that carnivore end of the spectrum, probably the least necessary fasting becomes. And that's because you are naturally controlling your blood glucose and your insulin because you're not consuming any foods that really cause a rise in those things. I mean, yes, protein does cause a rise in insulin, but protein also causes a rise in glucagon. So it's that offsetting nature, which leads to eating higher protein not really being a problem, even though it also can raise our insulin levels. For people who struggle to get enough calories, probably not the best idea, because we see such reduced hunger when people begin fasting that now they're not hungry at all. Now they're hardly eating. And if you're already struggling to get enough calories, especially if you're a person who struggles to maintain their muscle mass, definitely you should probably not be doing fasting or any type of time-restricted eating. And to that point, if you are concerned about your muscle loss, this was my reason for moving off of it. I was starting to get concerned about muscle loss and not being able to get enough protein throughout the day. You should probably not be fasting. And as we've said before, if you fall into either of these categories and you want to fast, but you know, you have some of these concerns, then just ease your way into it. Despite just the changing the hours, you can do it for 3 days out of the week instead of all seven.
That's good advice, yeah.
Many people who, when they begin fasting, they'll do it 5 days a week. They'll do it Monday through Friday and take the weekend off. And I think those are all very appropriate ways of going about this.
Yeah, I think that this is great. It makes it really bite-sized for people. And for the person listening, that's like, wait, I can do that? Yes, you can. Our biggest joke when we're coaching is this is not school. We're not your teachers. You're not getting a grade. You know, this is for you to use in your life. And so my best advice always when you're getting advice is take what you want and leave the rest. You know, nobody should ever be telling you exactly point by point, eat this almond at 2 o'clock and have an apple. Like, take what you want and leave the rest. So if this was helpful to you, we'd really appreciate you to head on over to our podcast, give us 5-star review. That'd be awesome. Share it on social media and let us know what your biggest takeaway was. But intermittent fasting definitely has my vote. And I guess a partial vote from you, huh, Mike?
I'm going to keep time-restricted eating just in a very managed way.
Thanks for tuning in. If you're a busy working parent like us, you understand the daily challenges. Our mission is to make exercise and nutrition simple and exciting, helping you and your family thrive even on the busiest days. We've got a fantastic free 5-day online challenge that's tailor-made for super busy people like you.
If you like a high-vibe workout environment with professional coaching, swing by one of our franchise studios for a free intro workout.
Check the show notes for details or head on over to purephysique.com when you have a moment. We know those moments are rare.
Until next time, lift weights, eat meat, and never forget, you were created on purpose for a purpose.
Do you want to just start over?
No.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.